And welcome to Total Engagement, the wrestling podcast made by a fan for the fans. Brought to you, of course, on the great MLW Radio Network and partners with our good friends over at WrestleZone.com, the world's most widely read internet wrestling news site. This week, first of all, before we get to this week, last week we had a busy week, tried a couple new things, and I think we're going to stick with them. I went ahead and did a Friday night, late Friday night, Saturday morning weekend preview. If there's a big weekend like the one we just had, I'm probably going to do that. And it seems like with AEW emerging and the further popularity of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and of course WWE putting out events every couple weeks or so, it seems like bigger weekends are more and more frequent. And we had a big one. I did a preview show, and I also did kind of a primer for New Japan Pro Wrestling fans. I'm one of those newer fans. I learn a little quickly, maybe not quick enough for some people who want accurate pronunciations, but nonetheless, I hope that was helpful to some of you. And then I did something called the Monday Morning Minute. It was a short show, just kind of recapping a little bit of the past weekend and giving you maybe a preview to the next week. And I think we hit upon a couple new stories as well. I'm glad you enjoyed that. It's crazy that as many people listen to Total Engagement, just as many listen to the bonus show, and just as many listen to the Monday Morning Minute. And the thing is now, summer is my busy time. For instance, as I said on another show, right now, I have 28 kids every single day, all day long, that I'm teaching music to. So that's pretty much a 10-hour day of being active and mentally active and having to focus. And it's hard to put out the amount of content I'd like to. But come the fall, I wouldn't be surprised if we went to a daily. But right now, we're going to drop our big show in the middle of the week and probably a bonus show once in a while on the weekend and a Monday Morning Minute, probably weekly. This week, we're going to talk about a couple things. A lot of people loved Extreme Rules. As a standalone pay-per-view, it was aight, but as a kind of precursor and as part of the overall booking for SummerSlam goes, I would have to say this is the worst booked SummerSlam of all time, and I will explain why. Thank God Bischoff and Heyman are coming in. Anything's got to be better. And not only that, I am going to talk about this week something that's a follow-up to something we did a couple days ago, which is the opportunity for WWE to increase its teen audience by having cool stars, and the story of a blown opportunity that took place almost 8 years ago to create three cool stars that would have brought the WWE into the future. What happened and where are they now? Stay tuned to find out. And finally, we're going to talk about something that I think we all know, but no one really puts a name on it. No one really talks about it. I'm going to call it the curse of the Cruiserweight Championship. And that is the curse of the Cruiserweight Championship for WWE since reintroducing the title with the Cruiserweight Classic. What is the list of wrestlers? What happened? And why? All this and more this week on Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, brought to you on the MLW Radio Network and partnered with WrestleZone.com, the world's widest read wrestling news website. Last week, we talked about the fact that the WWE has a 52% drop in teenage viewerships in 2 years. Process that just for a second. 52% in 2 years of teenagers. Again, like I said last week, it's terrible for so many reasons, but the main two I can think of is, number one, if kids aren't watching WWE, who's going to be watching WWE 20 years from now? And two, the entry point for most wrestling fans is, I believe, in that age group, maybe a little bit younger. But nonetheless, those are two big reasons why WWE should be concerned. And we talked about things that I thought they should do to create new stars, what kind of stars that kids today would be compelled to identify with. And we're not going to talk about that today because I think I made the point. But today what we're going to talk about is the blown opportunity the WWE had at one point in creating three cool stars at the same time and how they blew it. Now, those guys might be a little bit older now, but I think it's kind of an epitome, a point of conversation as to the trouble that WWE historically has had at building new talent. They have guys and they stop. And right now, there appears to be nobody. because really what we're looking for is someone who's cool. It is so hard to find someone who's cool. Roman Reigns, cool? Almost cool. Seth Rollins, cool? Eh, not really. Braun Strowman, is he cool? I'm not sure. But in 2011, the WWE had a chance to create three cool stars at the same time. One gigantic babyface and two gigantic heels. Now, those people were, I'm going to start with one, which is CM Punk. Now, Survivor Series 2011, if you know your history, probably better than you should, that is when CM Punk beat Alberto Del Rio and started his title reign that lasted 434 days. And we know that 434 days thing because we got reminded of it because they had to keep reminding us that CM Punk was important because he was never at the top of the card. So they gave him the title. They responded to the Summer of Punk. They gave him the title, but they never made it the most important thing. He was by far less important than The Rock and Cena. There were opportunities to make him as important. You could have made him as important during that whole 434 days and have him at the top of the card or second from the top of the card, because a lot of times he wasn't even that, and still had the emphasis on Rock and Cena, the big stars. But if Rock is an old star and Cena is a star kind of heading towards his twilight years, CM Punk was the guy who was cool, that he really could have gotten a bigger audience in if WWE would have leaned into it a little bit. Now, despite their best efforts, CM Punk was someone who got some fans, was someone who sold some merch. He outsold Cena at points. But the fact that they, I don't know if you can really say you buried someone who's a champion, but if you're not featuring the champion, you're telling everybody that the champion is less important than some other guys. And very many times during the 434 days, he had pay-per-views where he was in the middle of the card, or maybe fourth from the top, or maybe second from the top, but almost never at the very top. It was never considered that CM Punk was the best, was better than Cena, was better than The Rock, and that Cena and Rock was a grudge match, but the champ was CM Punk because they used that title a year from then, a little 434 days from then, to even make that match bigger. CM Punk was sacrificed. The not just CM Punk, but the opportunity to draw in the fan that wants to identify with the cool wrestler. Now, that's not all. Of course, we all know the story. Agree or disagree. But the fact is, if you want to create a star even today that would appeal to kids of today, and you had a CM Punk in his prime, that's kind of the guy who would do it. Now, you had two other guys. R-Truth. That's right. R-Truth and The Miz. That's right. The Miz. Now, The Miz already had the credibility of having the world championship, the much maligned world championship. But the fact is, he had it. He did headline WrestleMania. He did win the headline match of WrestleMania. R-Truth had come across as a real edgy heel with a bulletproof vest and strong talk and using a lot of those same elements that got him shot to the top in the early days of TNA. And those two guys, again, could have been elevated without sacrificing this very important Cena and Rock angle. Now, really, if you think about it, why push the Cena and Rock thing so hard at the sacrifice of the other guys? People are still going to be interested. People are still going to watch it. Cena and Rock are still going to have those awesome promos. They're still going to hate each other. They're still going to actually say some real life stuff and get mad at each other legit. It's still going to be interesting. Why sacrifice those guys? In a Survivor Series, the beginning of the CM Punk Championship was also the end of the opportunity for R-Truth and Miz to be headline stars. Truth as an edgy heel and Miz as the heel that he should have been when he won the championship, but he had a little more experience. He had the credibility behind him. So what'd they do? They put them in a tag team match against The Rock and Cena. Now, I ask you this. I know, you know, conventional wisdom is that Rock and Cena should win because they're going to Mania. But why? Why should they win? What possibly could be wrong if Rock and Cena's hubris overcame their greatness? The fans would still like them because people know Cena loves himself. People know The Rock loves himself. If their pride had them not able to work together to the point where a cheating heel team like Truth and Miz got the victory, that would have been huge for Truth and Miz. Instead, what do we get? From my recollection, we got a little bit of a squash. and it completely cut the legs out from these two guys who were now seen collectively almost not as good as one of the two of Cena and The Rock, but individually, had they won, had they been pushed the way they should have, they could have set up the future. They could have set up the next 5 years. R-Truth, as someone who's like an edgy heel, but when he turns face, the play, everybody's going to love him. Instead of the comedy figure he is now, I know everybody loves him. I know it's an unpopular take, but I'm talking about this guy being a main eventer. Look at the shape we all noticed he was in a year ago when we all started noticing him again. We go, damn, Truth is awesome. Truth has got great promos. Truth is great in the ring. He could have held that the main championship. And The Miz, who now they've been trying to get back up there, He's doing all he can, and he's over-delivering most of the time. But I don't think they ever recovered from this loss. CM Punk not being at the top of the card, not having a position that was worthy of his popularity, his impending popularity, and the prestige of the title, combined with cutting the legs underneath Miz and Truth, is indicative of the problem with WWE today. They could have something cool in their hands and not even know it. And they had three guys who could have carried the next 5 years. CM Punk, Miz, and Truth. And that is the truth. What are they doing today? I don't know. Take a look. You might see some similarities. The Cruiserweight title curse. Now, I hesitate to call anything a curse. I don't believe in those kind of things. However, when you see such a sequence of coincidences, maybe they're not coincidences. Maybe there's something supernatural, or in this case, natural, happening to make this title such a albatross around the neck of these wrestlers as far as their careers go. Now, let me say, I don't think it has anything to do with any of these wrestlers. Really any of them, even the ones that people don't like. Starting with TJ Perkins. TJ had a lot of go-away heat among the internet wrestling fans. I'm not sure that was fair, but he was the first winner. And he won it. Remember when he won that title? We all thought he was awesome. And he had those great matches. And then he lost it a month and a half later to Brian Kendrick. And it seemed like Brian Kendrick would kind of be the guy, you know, kind of the heel. And maybe this TJ Perkins-Brian Kendrick feud could elevate this new title to a position where we cared about it. Well, unfortunately, TJP dropped off the face of the earth over and over again. He was positioned as not a top guy, not a top cruiserweight. And by the time that the cruiserweight title was vacant again a couple years later, he was a non-factor. He turned heel and joined Neville. And then Neville turned on him. Nothing helps career more than that. And February 22nd, 2019, he was released. He's with Impact now. But I don't think that bodes well for the beginning of this title. Of course, Brian Kendrick, as we said earlier, won the title. He won it. He faked an injury. Won it. He was a heel. We thought maybe this would be the beginning of a great heel and face feud to elevate the title. Because if there's anything that elevates a title or an angle, it's having a compelling face and a compelling heel. Someone you can hate, someone you can love. But there was never any backup to it, and there were some circumstances. TJ had issues with injuries. Kendrick had some issues with injuries, and he never got the title back after losing it. And he almost made it an entire month before losing it, but he didn't really get it back. He got injured. He came back on Christmas Day 2017. And you know what his Christmas present was? A broken fucking nose from a GTS by Kenta, Hideo Itami. And, you know, it actually fractured his orbital bone and nasal bridge. Those are, when you start talking about orbital bones and nasal bridges, so that is what that title brought to him. And of course, the next person who got the title, November 29th, 2016, was Rich Swann. Now, Rich Swann had it for 2 months to the day. Think about what's going on. We have a 1.5 month reign. TJP's gone. We have a 1 month reign. Kendrick's in and out with injuries and gets his fucking nose broken. And then Rich Swann has a 2 month reign. And he lost it to Neville at the Royal Rumble. And he got injured. And he came back. And then he didn't get any more title shots. But almost a year later, December 10th, 2017, of course, we all know he was suspended following an arrest for domestic violence. Those charges were dropped. There was no complainant, and there was no police stepping in and pressing charges. Appears, by all accounts, to be a misunderstanding. Now, I know some of you out there might say it wasn't, but let me tell you, the only information we have to go on is that the charges were brought, The charges were dropped, and Rich Swann was suspended, and then he was fired. And I believe he was fired before he was cleared of the charges. I'm not sure that's the fairest way to go about it. He was scheduled to face Drew Gulak in a number one contenders match because by that time, the championship was held by somebody else, who we'll talk about in a second. But the match was canceled because of the arrest. And in February 2018, the WWE announced that Swann and WWE had mutually agreed upon his release. So once again, now we have three casualties of the Cruiserweight title. And also a casualty of maybe someone who did not receive due process. But no one really knows what happened that night between Swann and his wife. And I'll tell you one thing, we know a lot less than we probably think we do. So it's best to us to look at the public record and move on from there. Now, of course, maybe the greatest Cruiserweight champion of all time, they turned Neville heel, and man, he was fucking awesome, wasn't he? He was great. He was a bully. He looked like he was 5'8" and weighed 300 pounds of pure muscle. Neville was a guy they were putting the title on and they were going to elevate, but they kept diminishing what his role was, whether he was on Raw or whether he was on the main show or the pre-show. Of course, the infamous pre-show with another casualty of the Cruiserweight division, Austin Aries. Good thing he didn't get the title. God knows what would have happened to him. But eventually, he got in a contract dispute because he was going back and forth with the title. I think now looking back on it, he walked out on October 9th, of 2018 because he was scheduled to lose. And in light of the recent stories about him now as Pac not wanting to lose and it kind of costing AEW a high profile match, this sounds kind of consistent for him. But the fact is, maybe he should have been treated as a bigger deal. Maybe they could have put his matches higher on the card because his matches were great. Neville was fantastic. Pac is great. But the fact is, he's gone. And he does a thing where he sat out the contract. Matter of fact, the way it was done is it was indefinitely until it was agreed upon. And I guess at some point they agreed upon it. August 24th, they had agreed that it was time for Neville to go. So another instance of this Cruiserweight title being nothing but negative. If Neville would have never got the title and would just have been kind of a mid-card guy in WWE, he might have had an IC run or a US title run, but getting stuck in this 205 Live thing, it really killed his career in the WWE. Now, Akira Tozawa is someone who is an outlier. The exceptions make the rule. And I think my argument is that he held it for 6 days, and I don't think that's long enough to get the stank of the title on you. So he escaped by the skin of his teeth, and he's still wrestling for the WWE. He still has a chance to do some stuff. He was just in a high-profile Evolve match, and he's still in the mix. So you go, Akira Tozawa. Good luck, Godspeed, and we hope you never win the title again for a long time. And, of course, that brings us to, really, if you want to say somebody that represents the issues of this title, let's talk about Enzo Amore. Now, Enzo's a guy. I'm not a guy who hates Enzo like everybody else. My son and I were big fans of Enzo and Cass. Loved them. And we dug them on NXT. We thought they were ready far before they came out. They made their big splash on Raw in Dallas. We were there. And man, oh man, did they get a reception. People were ready. And a matter of fact, that night we went back to our hotel. We were staying at not the wrestler hotel for the company, but a hotel where a lot of wrestlers were. We're in line to get coffee. We see two women in front of us with Enzo Amore and Cass shirts. We start talking to them. It's Enzo's mom and aunt. And they were so happy. They were so thrilled that he finally made his debut. He'd been working this whole time. His mom talked about how he'd always been a great talker. He'd always been like that. They were so proud. They had tears in their eyes. And we felt like, hey, this is a guy we can get behind, we can root for. I guess the WWE felt a little bit different because apparently maybe he had some issues backstage. And of course, he had some injury issues. He knocked himself out on the bottom rope. And some other things happened, which led them to say, okay, we'll just kind of compartmentalize Enzo in this 205 thing. Maybe because he does have this potential, because he does have this personality, he does have this great gimmick that people love or they hate. And I mean, the cast turn was god awful. Do you guys remember that? Let's not remember that. But there's a chance that this guy could be a standard bearer for 205 Live, and the feud with him and Neville, maybe. That kind of juxtaposition between those two guys could really work to elevate the title a lot. And unfortunately, he was accused of sexual assault. He did not do it. He was cleared of it, but he didn't really get a chance to have his day. He didn't really get due process with WWE. From all accounts, it was that maybe people were sick of him, and this was the final straw, putting himself in that situation. I don't think he did anything wrong, because a lot of people, in the sense that he didn't report it, because I don't think he knew about it. A lot of people said he knew about it, he didn't say it. I don't think that's the case, but they let him go. Another casualty of the cruiserweight curse. Think about Swan and Amore, both accused of things that they were cleared of, that the charges were dropped of, and both lost their jobs very related to those charges. And we're going to end this with Kalisto, because I think we should end with 2017, because I don't want to jinx a couple of the guys who've had it since, Cedric, Buddy Murphy, Tony Nese, because they still got a chance. It's not over for them. Cedric, I guess, did that thing where he was a janitor. That's pretty awesome, I guess. And Buddy got to talk on SmackDown this week after not being seen for a month and a half. So this Cruiserweight title obviously is the platform to future success. Kalisto. Let's talk about Kalisto. Man, let me tell you, Kalisto. Kalisto is special to me. He was definitely special. He was different. He, to me, looked to be the heir apparent to the Rey Mysterio undersized guy. And I think they thought so, too. Dude won the U.S. title twice. He was in first contender matches for the Universal title. He was in first contender matches for the IC title. And he held it for 13 days because, if you remember, Kalisto won the title. He was a late replacement for Neville because Neville's like, fuck this, I'm out of here. And then he lost it 13 days later to Enzo. And, well, what's happened since? He was dumped in a dumpster. He had the world's worst interview of all time. And he joined the Lucha House Party. Now, at least they're not on lawnmowers, but they bring the piñatas of the ring. Okay, fine. Fine. They're embracing the culture. They're luchadors embracing the culture. Okay, let's say it's not racist and they're not bringing little piñatas to the ring and it's not saying, hey, here's some Mexicans, let's give them piñatas. Let's say it's not that. But what it does to Kalisto is it really diminishes him in the sense that he is not someone that you think of as special. He's just part of the six-man team. He's one of the Lucha House Party. Gran Metalik, Lince Dorado, and Kalisto. Not Kalisto, this fucking awesome guy who beat Ryback. So this Cruiserweight title was bad for him. So let's go down this list, and I dispute you to tell me there's a Cruiserweight curse. TJ Perkins, Brian Kendrick, Rich Swann, Neville, Akira Tozawa, Godspeed, good luck. I think you're good, you're the exception. Enzo Amore, Kalisto. And don't even talk about Austin Aries. He was a guy very present on TV who got a lot of time to kind of elevate the title, and he left too. Now, I don't believe in curses. I don't believe there's something magical and supernatural, but I think there's something to be said that, number one, people don't really think very much of the Cruiserweights in the WWE, because once they lost the title, they kind of forgot about them. Also, it seems they got this unfair kind of reaction to getting injured. If you got injured and you were cruiserweight, you're fucked. You're not getting the title back. You're not getting back in the picture. And there's just no emphasis on the title. And once you become stained with the cruiserweight tag, not so much the title tag, but the cruiserweight tag, that's what you're going to be. It's hard to make it back out. Once you're in, can you make it back out? I think that's unproven. We've got Cedric and Buddy Murphy who are trying to prove it now. But I think one thing that I have proved is there's definitely a Cruiserweight title curse. I don't think I have ever seen a worse buildup ever to SummerSlam. And I'm including No Holds Barred people. I'm including Zeus in this. I'll explain. Now, a lot of people liked Extreme Rules. And I think WWE has a history, especially recently, of putting on good pay-per-views. The wrestlers are wrestling great. The wrestlers are working hard, but the booking is fucking terrible. It is the laziest shit I've ever seen. Let me give you an example. So let's say, for instance, that the best they had back at Mania, when Seth Rollins beats Brock Lesnar and handily, is for Brock to disappear and get the Money in the Bank, cash in, and then re-face Seth Rollins for the title at SummerSlam. Is this the best way they could have done it? Now, I think we all know that wasn't the case. There's probably a lot of contractual shit with Brock and also stop and start stuff going on with other guys, including Baron Corbin. And you got Brock and Rollins. Oh, and by the way, Rollins won the right to face Brock Lesnar in a thrown together top 10 match. Top 10 match of the whole organization. Drew McIntyre wasn't in it. But yet, Rey Mysterio was, who just got destroyed by Bobby Lashley the week before. It wasn't the top 10 guys. It was 10 guys that they just decided could be in this match, and then Rollins wins it. There's your booking, people. There's everything. It's not this match people are clamoring to see, and Seth Rollins finally gets his way back into the title picture, or he is somehow people are behind him, the fact that he got robbed somehow. No, it's turnabout fair play. They're not even talking about what happened a couple years ago with Seth cashing in on Brock as turnabout fair play. They are just throwing this fucking match together. And there's no way in hell they knew this was going to be the match at Mania. I doubt it was the match they knew they were going to have 2 weeks ago. But yet, this is your main event match. We've gone to the last few SummerSlams in Brooklyn. I am very thankful it's not New York again, because we would go just to go because we love New York. But then I'd have to sit through that damn thing. Becky Lynch versus Natalya. Now, this has been a long build-up to a feud. I think this was the longest build-up I've ever seen, and I'm just talking about the match that Natalya was in. Jesus, was that match long. How was that match longer than the Battle Royal? It was so long, and then now Natalya is the number one contender. So as opposed to years past where you would build up ideas, you would build up booking as far as your top two matches, Lesnar and Rollins thrown together, Becky Lynch and Natalya thrown together, Bayley, just turned to the person next to her in the ring and said, hey, you want the shot? No build-up at all. Kofi Kingston versus Randy Orton. Again, no booking, no build-up. Oh, yeah, Randy Orton's on the roster. Let's put him in with Kofi. That should be interesting. That'll be fun. The three deadliest letters in sports entertainment history. RKO. Well, it's not the deadliest if there's been no build-up. It's just thrown together. It looks like we're going to have Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon. Okay, now this thing turned on a dime, but the performance for Kevin Owens has been so good that it's going to work. But this shit happened 2 years ago. New Day had the titles 2 years ago. Seth Rollins, or Brock Lesnar, was the champion 2 years ago. Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon was the match 2 years ago. Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor was a feud 2 years ago. Now I'm going to get some shit for this. But the Bray Wyatt thing was fucking terrible. I know a lot of you like it, so stay on. Don't turn off yet. Let me finish. So we had this Firefly Funhouse. And for once, there was subtleness. For once, there was nuance. For once, there was, like, what the fuck is going on? And for once, there was planning. Oh, there's a puppet. Oh, the puppet's a fucking killer or whatever the fuck. And the rabbit is dying. And all this stuff is going on. And then all of a sudden, boom, gone. Oh, there's a puppet showing up backstage once in a while. And then Bray Wyatt appears in his new gear where he looks like the Fat Joker, and he attacks Finn Balor. And so now we have this match. Why wasn't there buildup of Bray Wyatt tormenting Finn Balor for weeks? Why wasn't there more subtleness leading from Firefly Funhouse to this event? The subtlety, the work that went into this first couple episodes of Firefly Funhouse and going, disappearing completely. And just, here's Bray, and he's the fucking fiend now. But here's the prediction, of course, is that the demon is going to come out at SummerSlam, and the demon's finally going to lose. He's going to lose to Bray Wyatt's fiend, and it's going to give Finn Balor some time off. And I think it's going to help get Bray over, because, of course, he's suffered from terrible booking in the past. And hopefully this character is not DOA. People seem to like it, but they need a reason to keep liking it. That's SummerSlam so far. And to me, it is the laziest booking I think I've ever seen from the WWE. It is a SummerSlam that I am least forward to ever watching by the WWE. And I am so glad Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff are coming in, because at least they'll have fresh eyes. As we say in the studio, where you have fresh ears on a song, they have fresh eyes on it. And they might say something like, what the fuck? Lesnar and Rollins again? Natalya just appeared and now she's the number one contender. Ember Moon was just in a tag match. And Bayley was picked as her mystery partner. So then Bayley picked her as her title. And then Kofi, we'll talk about Kofi another time, but, you know, Orton is the guy for Kofi. Well, God, what if Orton beats him? And then Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor. We know what's going to happen there. The only saving grace, I think, is this Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon thing. But if history's any indication, you got something cool, they're going to blow it too. Thanks, guys, for listening. This has been Total Engagement, the big show, the big episode of Total Engagement. We might get a bonus show this weekend. We'll definitely get a Monday Morning Minute. And I thank you for listening. Please go to our new Facebook page, Total Engagement on Facebook, Matt Kuhn TE on Twitter. Please give us a 5-star review and counteract the trolls that have given bad reviews just to be trolls. And I just want to thank you guys for being part of the Total Engagement family. From my family to yours, have a great day.
Have a good day.
You don't think have a great day was solid, Matthew?
No.
But I am grateful, though, to the people that listen.
You gotta come up with like a closing line.
Come up with a closing line?
Every episode.
So a different one on every episode or the same one on every episode?
Like a signature.
Signature. Okay, I'll try one now.
Way the cookie crumbles.
That's the way the cookie crumbles? All right, I'll try that. All right. And that's the way that... No, that's fucking stupid. Hold on a second.
It's from a movie.
I know. And after you do all that social media stuff and download all of our shows and give us a 5-star review, I just want to thank you for being totally engaged with Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, on the MLW Radio Network. Partnered with WrestleZone.com, the most read wrestling news site on the planet. What do you mean that's what I decided on? What was wrong with that?